This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. New banners draped over Peace College's old brick walls announce a big change for the school. Next fall, for the first time ever, men will sit alongside women in undergraduate classes. And the school gets a new name, William Peace University. The Board of Trustees' announcement last month took alumni by surprise, and not all of them are pleased. More than 100 women gathered at the campus fountain recently to protest the school's new course. What's next for William Peace University, and what is the future of single-sex higher education? Debbie Cottrell is here. She's the provost of William Peace University, and Omashade Bernie Scott is a Peace College alumna. Her classmates knew her by the nickname Billy, and she is now director of strategic projects at the YWCA of the Greater Triangle. And reporter Jane Stansel joins us by phone from the News and Observer in Raleigh. I want to welcome all of you to the show. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Debbie, tell us about the decision. Why is Peace College going co-ed?
Well, I think Peace, like all women's colleges, has known that looking to be strong and vital in the future, could not be afraid to consider change and to consider big change such as co-education. I think all women's colleges do have to think about that issue regardless of what side they come out of on it. For us, pure and simple, a major factor was enrollment. Peace is a college that has seen some growth since its transition to a four-year college, but not as much growth as we want and as we need and as we have the capacity for. And so for us, the decision to go co-ed was rooted deeply in that.
And Jane Stansel, this decision came after a year of much change at the college. Tell us about what the many changes that preceded this decision.
Well, I think the college has seen a good bit of upheaval in the last year. The new president, Deborah Townsley, came in last August and set about making some changes. Trustees set about making some changes. There was a downsizing of the faculty. Buyouts were offered, and professors either decided to take the buyout or not. Some were also let go. Some curriculum changes were put in, some majors. The music major was dropped in favor of a new major, which will be musical theater. Some music, the music department was terminated, and a couple of those professors ended up suing the college. So there's been a good bit of upheaval, but Peace has always changed, you know, through the years. It's been changing. So, you know, I think some alumni were very upset with the initial changes with beloved faculty leaving, and now they're upset about many of them upset about this recent move to becoming co-ed.
And Omi, you are among those who are not happy with this decision. Tell us why.
Well, I have to go back before I tell you why, that the fact that when I first heard about Peace College, it came by way of my mother's experience of going to Bennett College. My mother entered Bennett in the fall of 1950.
Bennett, an all-women's college.
All-women's college, African-American college in Greensboro.
Right.
That's exactly right. So 35 years later, I entered Peace College. And there were a number of people who made that process of entering Peace so easy for me. Cynthia Wyatt, Dean Edwards, different folk. And so I have amazing memories of Peace, what it meant to kind of operate with a sense of agency that came from inside of me. You know, Madeleine Albright in her commencement address to Wellesley talked about the fact that women need to operate with a sense of agency that comes from within as opposed to coming from an external force. And part of my experience at Peace was being empowered and given the opportunity to develop that sense of agency, my voice, my leadership, and to not have any distractions or a sense of competition or an environment where I felt like the only way for my voice to be heard was to have to shout. It was very easy for me to find my voice at Peace.
You had that chance. You had that experience. It has served you well, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Peace College and the trustees and the president now say it's time to change. How does that affect your experience? You get to keep your experience now, don't you?
I get to keep my experience, and I still think that experience is relevant. I think part of what I see is a continuation of experiences that not only women who attended Peace, but other women who have attended women's colleges get to have. You know, there's been this 2% quoted quite frequently in the last several weeks by President Townsley, that only 2% of women who go to undergraduate programs choose women's colleges. But those 2% are still by far outperforming women who go to coeducational institutions in terms of attaining professional degrees, going to graduate school, being in leadership roles. I mean, I dare say that Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright and Marion Wright Edelman and the first woman to be a judge in North Carolina, who was a Peace alumni as well, would say that their degrees are not relevant. So I think much like Meredith College and Mount Holyoke and Smith and other schools have figured out how to be relevant and innovative in a 21st century context, I think Peace, this decision, I think, was a little rash. It was premature. I think that there were other decisions that could have been made before this was the final decision.
Debbie, what were some of the other considerations? Certainly there must have been other considerations on the table before this decision was made.
Well, I'll start by saying the sorts of things that have to be looked at. I think Billy makes some great examples, and I wouldn't disagree at all about some of the outcomes of the women's colleges that she cited. But every women's college is different. And so when you go to look at the dynamics within a women's college and viability and sustainability, you certainly have to start, again, I'll say, with enrollments, and you have to look at your trends and what that data is telling you. The 2% figure is accurate, but more importantly for us is what did that mean for Peace. You also have to look at what other kind of support you have, your endowment, what that's doing for you, the size of that endowment, and also your the base of your alums and their ability to support you as an institution. So all of those factors fed into the dynamic at Peace that then led us to look at where we were and, more importantly, where we thought we wanted to be in the future. And I would be quick to say we did not feel that we were on the precipice of a crisis or disaster, but we did feel like for the future we had to have our eyes open to some of the challenges that we were facing.
I mean, these are financial considerations. You're saying you're not on the precipice now, but if you look out into the future, the trajectory wasn't good financially.
Well, when you're a small college, your enrollments, your full-time student enrollments, particularly at Peace, but at all small colleges, that's really the backbone of your operation. And so if that number is not healthy, robust, and showing signs of how it's going to grow, then I think you at least have to acknowledge that and figure out what you're going to do about that. And so when you then look at what your options are, and there certainly are options, I mean, some women's colleges have chosen simply to close. Some have merged with other colleges, made changes like that. So you can always look at things like that. But in evaluating the data and the particular situation at Peace, we felt that for Peace to be there and be strong and relevant in the future, expanding our enrollment base was the right way to go.
Jane Stansel, this you talked about the year of upheaval at Peace. It sounds like change was in the making. Why was Deborah Townsley, the new president of Peace, hired last year?
Well, I think the trustees felt like she had done a very good job with growing enrollment at Nichols College, where she had been previously, and sort of turning around a small college and growing it pretty significantly, growing the numbers of students there and the endowment also, so strengthening financially a small college. She had some experience in that, and I think they were impressed by that. I take it that's why they hired her.
Omi Shade, tell us about your relationship as an alumna to Peace. It was a two-year college when you went, and then you mm-hmm. finished up at Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
What was your relationship? Is it an alumni association, close relationship?
Mm-hmm. I would say initially it was rather close. I think in the most recent years it hasn't been as close. I graduated from Peace 24 years ago, is that right?
Whatever 1987.
Whatever 1987 makes that is kind of insane. And I think part of my experience as an African American woman at Peace is complex. You know, I have a tremendous amount of love and fond memories for Peace, and I also recognize that at the time that I was enrolled in Peace, the only women who looked like me worked in the cafeteria or were housekeepers. Actually, there were five women of color, black women, At that time, and the enrollment was between 500, 600 women at that time, something like that. And so my experience over the last, you know, few years of being a mom of a rising college freshman and a three-year-old has taken my attention elsewhere. But as soon as the news started to percolate on Facebook, that's where I first heard about it, it really triggered me emotionally. And I immediately reached out to my sister alum who graduated the year before me, the year I did, and the year after me. And there was so much emotionality around that. I was trying to figure out what was triggering that for me. And I just remember showing up on campus in 1985 from New Bern, North Carolina, just ready to do whatever was going to happen, and being welcomed from the president, Dr. Frazier, to the women in the cafeteria. Like, they wanted me to be there. They wanted me to be there. And so I think that we also know that it's important for women and girls to be supported in their educational experience. And we still live in a society where women aren't paid their worth. And I just think that this decision, it resonated with me in so many ways. And I will say this point is that I think that not having a conversation with alumni outside of a webinar and receiving a letter was very dissatisfying.
Debbie, I've got about 30 seconds in this segment, but we can come back. Should the college have taken into account and had better communication, do you think, with the alums? Were they part of this decision? Should they have been part of this decision?
There was a strategic task force that the board put in place, and it did include alumni members. And so I think in a common way that you see these things unfold, there was some alum voice at the table, as there was the voice of trustees and others of us from the administration and from the faculty. I think any time there is a momentous and significant decision, and one, and also when you have alums who are passionate and love the institution, you're going to have challenges in terms of how the communication is going to satisfy everyone.
We're going to come back to our conversation on William Peace University as it goes co-ed. Our conversation on the state of things continues from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, talking about William Peace University, formerly Peace College. The school's trustees announced last month that Women's College would become co-ed beginning in the fall of 2012. With me in the studio are Peace University Provost Debbie Cottrell, Omishade Billy Bernie Scott, a 1987 Peace graduate, now the Director of Strategic Projects at the YWCA of the Greater Triangle. And joining us now by phone are Joe Allen, who's the president of Meredith College, which is a women's college in Raleigh. That's Joe Allen from Meredith College. And Rosemary Salamone is a professor of law at St. John's University in New York, author of the book Same, Different, Equal, Rethinking Single-Sex Schooling. I want to welcome both of you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, I want to thank Jane Stansel, who was with us in the previous segment from the News and Observer newspaper. Rosemary Salamone, you have looked at the state of women's-only schools for quite a while now, and in the last 50 years, a lot of those schools have made the decision that Peace recently made. What is fueling that trend?
What's fueling it largely is changing social mores. Part of it is Title IX itself, which may pose a problem for Peace in a legal sense. That most women today are not interested in single-sex colleges. Once the men's colleges opened their doors to women, co-education became the norm in higher education. And so a large part of the problem is just market forces. Some of it has to do with the law and concerns about Title IX, which Peace is now understanding.
What are those concerns?
Well, Title IX was a law that was adopted by Congress back in 1972, and it prohibits programs or activities within education that receive federal monies, like even student government-guaranteed student loans, for example, or research money. Once an institution receives government funds, they're subject to Title IX, and they're prohibited from discriminating on the basis of sex. Now, within the original law, there is this exception for undergraduate institutions of higher ed that traditionally and continually from their establishment had been single sex, which peace was for many years, and so was protected under that exception. And so the question becomes now, is peace taking themselves out of that exception by going co-ed and then trying to, in a way, have their cake and eat it, admitting men but separating students by sex within certain courses?
Well, maybe we should talk about that right now, Debbie. There is a plan to allow women to take women-only classes. First of all, what's behind the idea?
Well, a slight clarification on that. Our hope and our thinking is that we can draw on what we've understood about women's education to structure some of our classes, as yet unidentified, in areas as yet unidentified, acknowledge that different types of learning styles can be more effective with different types of students. We've not said, and it's not our intention, to keep any students out of any classes. We understand what Title IX means, and we understand the legalities, and obviously anything we do will be done with a very close connection to what the law allows. But we do believe that there could be some interesting work to be done in some areas of our curriculum with our faculty helping us shape and determine that to acknowledge that certain ways of teaching might be more appealing to women or to men, and the classroom could still be mixed, but there might be some choice for the students. Students may make choices based on what they know about those courses coming into them.
Oh, and of course, some of that is behind what has sustained women's only, men's only colleges for these many years in the post-Title IX age. Joe Allen, you were a graduate of Meredith. You're the current president. Meredith remains firmly committed to a single-sex format. What role do you think all-female institutions play in this post-Title IX age?
Well, one of the things that I think is critical is understanding how important it is for today's students to have options. And so while co-ed education is not right for every student, nor is single-sex education right for every student. So I think it's one of the key pieces is helping students and their families investigate the college experience from a richer and broader perspective. What women's colleges are able to do for those students is to provide the kind of benefits that are not explicitly available at co-educational colleges. And for us, and from my own experience as a student at Meredith many years ago, we were laughing at how many years ago that actually was, but to have the opportunity to take a really active role in the classroom and in leadership roles on campus and in the community and global experiences. And what Meredith has been able to do is to look very carefully, studying the research on learning and the kinds of experiences that are best for women getting those kinds of leadership opportunities globally as well as regionally.
Rosemary Salamone, you know, it appears that Meredith is still going and has made a commitment to continue as an all-women's college. The big universities, Smith, Bryn Mawr, Mount Holyoke, Wellesley, they're not going anyplace soon. Are they or are they? Are any of those institutions threatened?
I don't really think so. I mean, particularly for the larger institutions that are very well endowed. I think, and again, it really goes to revenue. They can afford to maintain their single-sex status. They have more fundraising capabilities among their alumni. And so I really don't think they're threatened at all, and they shouldn't be. You know, I am a firm supporter of single-sex schooling and single-sex higher ed. The problem arises in a case like this with Peace, where you're separating students within certain classes and you're basing it on these differences in learning styles. And some of those differences are coming out of brain research, which is very new and very untested. And I see this happening in elementary and secondary schools, where there's this similar phenomenon of gender separation. And it does lead to a certain amount of gender stereotyping, where it might be somewhat justified for young children. By the time individuals are 17, 18 years old, you would think that those differences in learning styles have sorted themselves out. And these are young people who are about to go into the workforce and have to work together. So to assume that women work best collaboratively and men work best competitively, you're only feeding into these stereotypes, whereas both groups really have to learn effectively in both ways.
Well, what about that, Debbie? The idea that this research, A, some of it might be old, and B, you might be on a slippery slope in sort of buying into it.
Well, and I think I understood Rosemary to say that some of it is also very new research, which is part of the academy. You're always interested in what's new and where learning is going. I would also say that we're always interested in what's going to make sense to have the best curriculum to serve our students. I appreciate and have much respect for not only the research, but the points that Rosemary's making. But I do think that as we work with our faculty and we look at the best way to go about serving our students, I think we'll be able to figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work, and certainly not going to go down a road that wouldn't be sustainable. I mean, the ultimate goal around all of the decisions that Peace has made is to ensure a strong, vital, exciting future at the college that's serving a student body that's robust and matches the capacity of the college. And so that's the way we'll undertake this particular classroom issue that's received quite a bit of attention, as well as everything else that we're doing at the college.
Well, Omi, it sounds like there is a future for all women's colleges and that and universities, and that's something that's very important to you. Mm-hmm. It sounds like Peace decided its future was not rooted in that. I mean, are you satisfied at all that there will be a place in the world for all women's colleges?
To some degree, yes. I think, you know, globally speaking, I recognize the importance of educating women and girls. I think, you know, for me, I can't disassociate the personal impact of my experience. And I know for a fact that the alumni that I've been in contact with are saddened by this decision. They're concerned about the underlying rationale. You know, there are many ways in which people attain a degree in higher education these days. You can go online. There are all these proprietary schools that make access available to people. You never have to step foot in a classroom. But there are also studies that talk about the importance of environment and involvement. And for me, I think what made Peace distinctive was the fact that it was all female environment where, once again, I was empowered to look within for my voice and for my leadership. It wasn't an external exercise. And I also, it made it possible for me to be involved from soup to nuts in any way I chose to be involved. And I did. I really took advantage of that. So I still think there's a conversation that needs to be had with alumni. I can't express that enough. There was a webinar, and there have been some, you know, communication through mail. But I believe in old school social technology. You know, sitting down across, you know, from me at a table and listening to what I have to say, whether the decision remains the same or not, I think that's a respectful, you know, way to approach this thing.
Well, let's talk about some of the differences that we might find on the campuses of co-ed and all women's colleges. Rosemary, let me start with you with this question. Does an all-female school take any pressure off of women to become sexually active?
To some extent, it does. And I have to agree with the notion that a women's college creates a totalistic environment for women where they can develop leadership skills. There are courses geared toward developing those kinds of skills in women, not based necessarily on differences in learning style. And it does take some of the pressure, that rating and dating pressure and the kind of casual hooking up that you might see at coeducational institutions. So for some women, that does provide somewhat of a safe haven in a social sense. But again, it also goes back to the empowerment of women, which I believe, as a matter of policy, not of law, that you really do lose once you admit men into the institution.
When you talked about the differences, though, you said, well, it's not based necessarily on learning styles, but there are different ways that you would construct courses in order to build leadership skills. What are those differences? What are they based on?
I think I'm not so sure you construct courses so differently is that you really focus on leadership skills for women. And women feel a certain sense of comfort and empowerment in an all-female, some women, in an all-female institution, that there are a number of courses that are geared toward developing those skills, that are moving women into non-traditional careers like in math and science. Women's colleges have been extraordinarily effective in doing that. But I don't think it's necessarily because women learn differently. It's just giving them the opportunity to learn those skills.
Jo Allen, let me put that same question to you at Meredith.
Yeah, I think a few things that are particularly valuable here. One is looking at the kinds of leadership
that women typically embody. And then looking at a lot of the new research that's been, you know, very well supported on strengths-based leadership, positive psychology, emotional competency, some elements of that that fed into a curriculum and an exploratory environment for women are particularly strong when coupled with strong academic disciplines. And I think there's a real opportunity, the kind of niche that a strong women's college like Meredith offers is a way of bringing together the strengths that women already have, the things we're learning about their leadership styles in terms of collaboration, in terms of resilience and adaptability to both change and pressures that you mentioned earlier, as well as to build all of those experiences into a well-founded self-confidence that goes out into the workplace and goes out into the world and in our community.
Let me stay with you for a moment and switch gears a bit and ask about fundraising and how those pressures for a single-sex university might be different than a co-ed university, Joe Allen?
Sure. Well, I think it's, you know, common knowledge that fundraising is changing dramatically in this time of an economic downturn and all of that. What we are finding, however, is that Meredith's alumni and donors have been very generous, continue to be very generous. We have raised more than $1 million last year in our annual giving, which is as strong as ever. And, in fact, our participation rate among alumni has actually increased over the past year. One of the things that is very obvious from the guests that you have on your show is that many, many of the alumni from women's colleges are very passionate about their colleges and about their experience and about their commitment to supporting their alma maters. So we're quite fortunate in that as well. Again, as Debbie mentioned, we are a tuition-driven institution, so the fact that our enrollment is very healthy is absolutely critical to us, but also increasing our visibility and the advantages that we offer as a women's college are part of all that broader message about enrollment and economic support and fundraising.
Have you had that conversation at Meredith, looking at that 2% figure, only 2% of women who are college-bound would consider going to an all-women's college? Your tuition, as you said, most of your revenue depends on tuition. I'm guessing you must have had this conversation about your future at Meredith.
Well, I mean, any good college is constantly scanning the landscape and having conversations about its future, but also looking at what are the ongoing trends that are affecting decisions we have to make? And that ranges from the draw of students that we have. So if you want to talk about the 2%, you know, that can sound a little scary until you realize that still means that thousands of women are interested in single-sex education, and that as long as you're offering strong academic programs and in an area particularly as attractive as Raleigh and the Research Triangle Park, you're going to still have plenty of applicants and strong students ready to come to Meredith. So I don't think it's right to be too frightened by statistics until you understand what those numbers actually mean. And so in that bigger picture, too, of understanding trends, I mean, we're looking at trends all the time based on what students expect from residence halls and what students expect from their academic programs and from technology on campus. And all of those things feed into decisions we have to make about our priorities and how we use our resources in the best possible way.
Well, Ms. Sade, you are in a position to be able to compare a co-ed school with an all-women's college, and we talked about the social pressures that may or may not exist on campus. What was the difference for you when you switched to UNC, just in terms of the social environment?
Oh, there was a significant difference. I remember being a student at Peace and being able to, and this may not sound attractive to other people, but it was very attractive to me, to be able to roll out of bed and go straight to class. I didn't have to do anything. I just put on a baseball cap and went to class. And I didn't have to do anything to be fully animated in class. They saw me. You know what I mean? So I didn't have to compete.
What does that mean?
I was immediately seen as someone who could fully participate in class. I didn't have to jockey for position. I didn't have to engage in extraordinary feats of intellect. You know, I just had to open my mouth or raise my hand. And I had access to all of my professors during office hours, off office hours, in the cafeteria. At any point, there was always an open door.
That perception that you had to do something, that you didn't have to do anything exceptional to be noticed or
right.
to be acknowledged.
Right.
Did that change when you
it
went
did.
To
it It did. It did change when I went to UNC. Well, first of all, I was not going to roll out of the bed and go to class. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Be very clear about that. And then the second thing is the classes were larger. And I do recall being in a political science class with quite a few young men who were clearly striving to become attorneys and wanted you to know that in their junior year of college. And so they were engaging in extraordinary feats of intellect. And I always felt like I had to do something kind of weird to get the teacher to look my direction so I could offer my two cents and whatever we were talking about that day. Sometimes it was acknowledged. Sometimes it wasn't. I was always acknowledged when I was at Peace. There was never a moment where I wanted to say something or to speak up, and I wasn't given that opportunity.
Debbie, we've only got about a half a minute left, but I want to get a sense of whether there are other changes in store at William Peace University.
Well, as President Allen noted, a good university is always going to be looking ahead and considering what kind of changes might be made. But I think we feel very good about where we are at this point in terms of positioning ourselves for strength ahead and have a lot of work to do. As you noted, our coeducational enrollment will actually begin a year from now. So we'll spend a lot of time in the year ahead preparing for that. And I would add, too, that I think there are two themes that have come up today that actually connect to what we're doing at Peace. I agree with President Allen that options are very important, and I don't think anything that we're doing it disagrees with that idea that options are a good choice for women. And I think diversifying is also good, and we will now be in Raleigh different. There will no longer be two women's colleges just a few blocks from each other, but we will be the private coeducational college with a very strong past as a women's college.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Debbie Cottrell, provost at Peace University, now William Peace University. Omishade Bernie Scott, 1987 graduate of Peace College, known to her alums as Billy. And Joe Allen is president of Meredith College. Rosemary Salamone is a professor of law at St. John's University and the author of the book Same, Different, Equal, Rethinking Single-Sex Schooling. Thanks to all of you for being here. Next up, why everybody loves Dolly Parton. Stay tuned.